Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is the show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions, even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There I explain my worldview and what I've learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts, and I hope you'll join me there. Our guests today are Drs. Ron and Mary Holnick. The Holnicks are recognized pioneers and worldwide leaders in the field of spiritual psychology. Ron and Mary serve as the University of Santa Monica's founding faculty and co-directors. In 2011, the Holnicks co-authored Loyalty to Your Soul, The Heart of Spiritual Psychology, and Remembering the Light Within, A Course in Soul-Centered Living. Licensed as marriage and family therapist in the state of California, Ron and Mary have maintained a private practice for more than 30 years. Mary Holnick holds a PhD from Iowa State University, and Ron Holnick holds a PhD in counseling and education from New Mexico State University. Ron Holnick is also a certified magician. Drs. Ron and Mary Holnick, welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be here.
Yes, thanks, Dave, very much. Yes, Ron is indeed someone who loves magic.
Yeah, how did you get involved with magic, for Pete's sake?
I don't know. I just, I just always had a sense of the awe and the wonder of it, and I love that. Magicians operate in the crease between what you see and what you expect and then what happens. And I like to think we operate in that crease as well, only in terms of consciousness rather than manipulating things.
Yeah, okay, there you go. No magic in the university.
Well, it's all magic.
Okay, it's all magic. All right. Now, you two founded the University of Santa Monica. What inspired you to do that?
Well, we didn't really found the university. The university was founded in 1976 by our spiritual teacher, John Roger. But we met him in, what, Mary, 78 or so?
Yes,
or
1978.
And he told us, we have this university, and you two are ideally suited for it. If you've ever had a dream of having your own university and doing it exactly the way you'd like to do it, I'd like you to really consider coming on board. Well, how could we refuse that?
So now you've been there quite a while, obviously. So you've molded it into your beliefs and what you think is important. What's different about the University of Santa Monica versus other spiritually oriented universities?
Well, the big difference is that most universities in general are dealing with what we call a knowledge approach, where information is given and then you make of it what you will, and it's totally up to you what you choose to buy into and not buy into. But at USM, what we have done is that we have taken a set of principles and combined them with experiential practices, because to know about is different from knowing. We only know through experience. And so our work is highly, 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 highly experiential.
Okay. Now you wrote a book on spiritual psychology. What is spiritual psychology?
Spiritual psychology is really the study and practice of conscious awakening. And by that term, awakening, we mean waking up into the awareness of your essential nature, which is loving, peaceful, joyful, creative, wise, and more. And the other thing, Dave, that I would say is unique about education at the University of Santa Monica is that people learn how to apply the principles and practices to situations, experiences, and what happens inside of them related to their everyday life. So it's not esoteric in the sense of being so elevated that it may inspire. What we've done is take the principles and create processes that are very practical through which students can learn to live more into their own spiritual awareness as a part of awakening in their everyday life, and also through that process, the quality of their life also improves.
Okay, so you talk about principles. What are a few of the key principles that are incorporated in spiritual psychology?
Well, I think one of the most important principles is that we are divine beings having and using a human experience. If you accept this principle, what it does, it gives you entrance into the spiritual context, into the awareness that there's more going on here than five-sense reality and what you see in physical world reality, that there is purpose and meaning to our lives. I think one of my other favorite principles is that growth is a process, not an event. In other words, our process of awakening is something that we have the opportunity to participate in every single day of our lives, and that through that process of awakening, not only do we reside more in our essential nature, but also our eyes are opened more to the reality of spirit.
So let me expound on that just a little bit more. The way that most of us grow up in this world, the way we're educated, the way we're conditioned, we are taught that things going on out in the world are what determine our inner state. So if something happens out in the world and I don't like it, then I might react in an angry way, and I'll blame the outside situation or circumstance as the cause of my inner reaction. And the spiritual orientation that we work with says that's not really true. And the proof for that is really very simple, because the same event may result in different people having a very different experience about that event. For example, a certain election that happened recently, two different people will have two very different emotional reactions to what occurred. So it turns out that what you experience is totally going on inside of you. It is not caused by what happened out there. It is really caused by what you believe to be true about what should be going on out there or not. And as long as you operate in that reality, you get to blame outside circumstances, all the people in your life that treated you badly, which is why you are the way that you are, versus in our approach, everything that goes on inside of you is under your dominion, and you can change any of it regardless of what's going on out in the world. So it's a very, very, very empowered approach. And we say how you relate to the issue is the real issue. So we seek to work from within to change our inner let's call it our inner matrix, rather than look to change things outside. Not that you shouldn't change things outside if you want to, but you can do it through loving rather than through againstness. And that's one of the basic tenets of what we espouse.
So what you're saying is our beliefs are critical to our happiness.
Absolutely.
Yes, and our perspective is that personal internal reality is subjective, and that what we believe determines our experience, and that our beliefs also are what attract certain experiences to us. And so part of the work that we assist students in learning to do, and the book will assist readers in learning to do, is to cleanse the lens of their own perception. In other words, that all of us have a matrix, a perceptual filter that consists of the beliefs that we have taken on, that we have internalized. Some of these may work for us. Others may be limiting and restrictive, but the work of letting go of the beliefs that limit and restrict is a very, very liberating process.
You know, I love the Tao, and Lao Tzu is one of my favorite people. And one of the things that's in that book, it says you can believe what you see, or see what you believe. Do you think most people use their opinions to justify their beliefs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. See, that's the way that what we refer to as our ego consciousness, which consists of largely the mind and the emotions, and which has polarity, it has positive and it has negative, as determined by us. We tend to see the world through that lens. Spiritual psychology is about learning how to access the deeper recesses within, where we only see things through the lens of love. And things look much differently when you see through that lens. You start behaving in a different way because you take on a willingness, which most people don't have, to accept personal responsibility for everything that is going on in your life. That's not an easy sell.
It's not an easy sell. Do you think most people know what they believe?
I think people are aware to some degree of what they believe, but so many beliefs are outside conscious awareness because they are based upon conclusions that were drawn usually relatively early in life, based on certain experiences that happened. Often that were challenging, difficult, painful, and people draw erroneous conclusions about themselves, about how life works. We have a little quote from a poet that we just love. The siren blew, the dishwasher broke. I learned sirens break dishwashers.
Yeah, right. How true.
Beliefs... Anytime anybody says to you, I believe this or I believe that, they're telling you that they don't know. They don't know. You would never say, I believe the sun is out. You would just look and see if it's out. And your statement would be one of knowing. The whole idea or the whole goal beyond, or the goal of spiritual psychology, is to move more and more into that awareness of what is true, what is going on out in the world and inside of yourself, not based on a belief, but based upon what your own experience has been. And to us, that is really the point of empowerment, because nobody is going to, you know, if you say the sun is out, no one's going to say, no, I don't think so. You say, well, just look outside and see for yourself. And it becomes very obvious.
If beliefs are self-limiting, then how do we change them? I mean, you know, beliefs are tough, you know? How do you change them?
Well, the first the first thing that one has to do, and this is probably the biggest hurdle, at least right at the beginning, is to consider the possibility, that you can know experientially regardless of what you believe. So you learn how to adopt the attitude of what we refer to as the neutral observer. You look because you have an honest interest in the what-isness of things rather than in the beliefs of things. And so we cultivate that sense of neutral observation. And we become what we refer to as the spiritual scientist. So we start running experiments and we say, well, gee, if I let go of this, then how can I run an experiment to determine whether or not this is true? And there are things that we can do. We can run those kinds of experiments. But I wouldn't advise people start doing that unless they are ready to consider the possibility that it's going to lead them into accepting 100% responsibility for everything that's going on inside of themselves.
Part of what I would say about this is that this involves people in a very authentic inquiry. And, you know, maybe the best way to talk about this is through an example. In the book, one of the stories that I share is about a woman who grew up in a very wealthy family. And they had cooks, house servants, maids, and yet the conditioned beliefs that she had about money were that I can't buy what I want. You can't. It's not good to have what you want because it's really unnecessary. Therefore, you can do with less. It's a virtue to spend as little money as possible, especially when it comes to luxury items. If you want something, you can't have it now. You have to wait until later. It's important to live below your means so you don't run out of money. So you can see just from those statements, she was really conditioned into a consciousness of lack, despite the fact that her family had great wealth and financial abundance. And part of the way that people let go of beliefs is through this deep inner inquiry into what the beliefs are in a particular area. The example I gave was about money, but many, many people have conditioned beliefs about relationship, especially intimate relationships, partnership, that are limiting and restricting them. And part of how people release these limiting beliefs is by their honest inquiry, is by recognizing the restrictive nature and the inaccuracy, or let me say this, the inquiry assists them in challenging the validity of these beliefs. So you ask the question, how do people let go of these beliefs? And this is one of the most powerful aspects of spiritual psychology. And we write about this extensively in Remembering the Light Within. And it's through the process of compassionate self-forgiveness. I forgive myself for buying into the misbelief that it's not okay for me to enjoy the fruits of my labor. I forgive myself for buying into the misunderstanding that if I buy things now, it means I'm going to run out of money in the future. Self-forgiveness is it's compassion in action. It's a process of recognizing what we've been doing to ourselves through the process of holding limiting beliefs and judgments and then letting them go. The mystical poet Rumi had a most amazing quote. He said,
he you said what?
Help me, Ron.
Which quote are you looking
for? The barriers.
You said, your task is not to seek for love. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers that you have built within against it. And then to that we add, and to dissolve them.
And compassion, self-forgiveness is the mechanism for dissolving them. I think one of the biggest misidentifications, which is just another form of belief that people hold, is the misidentification that they are unworthy. And compassion, self-forgiveness is the tool through which people can let go of that misidentification.
You know, I remember your example in the book, and as I recall, you gave some questions that people can use to help them understand some of these beliefs that they have. And some of the questions were, you know, what and by whom were we taught this?
Mm-hmm.
What were the rules we went by? And do we convince ourselves we are unworthy, which you're just talking about? And do our beliefs filter our perceptions? And I thought those were really good questions.
Yes.
That people can use to help them get started in this thing. You know, I think once you get started, then you can start making some progress. If you know, it's getting out the door that's you know, that seems to be the tricky part.
That's exactly why we wrote the book the way that we did. So if used in the way that we recommend, there are 26 chapters, and if you work with one chapter every 2 weeks, that will take you a year to complete it. And 2 weeks gives a person ample time to lean into the relatively small steps that each chapter would require, and each one leads into the next one. So it is a very, very good way for people to get started, because the things it asks are not gigantic steps. It just says, take a very, very, very small step and just take it for 2 weeks and then see where you are. And if you want, take the next step.
How important is the fear of change in all of this?
Oh, my God.
It's so great that you're bringing that up, because we all have a comfort zone, and it's based primarily on familiarity, what we're familiar with. The ego loves the comfort of familiarity because it gives us a sense of security. It gives us a sense of being in control. It feeds that illusion. And so the comfort zone is one of the things that we have the opportunity to become more aware of, and the opportunity in part is to be willing to take small steps to do things that take us beyond the limitation and restriction of the familiarity of the comfort zone. The ego will resist change, and so when one embarks on the process of conscious awakening, the ego will do many things to attempt to maintain the status quo.
We talk a lot, everybody talks a lot about spiritual growth, but what is it?
Spiritual growth for us is awakening into the awareness of your essential loving nature and living your life more in accordance with that. Mon spoke a little bit about I'm upset because, and one of the best measures of spiritual growth from my point of view is the degree to which you have deactivated the hot buttons that would have in the past led you to react with judgment, with negativity, with againstness, with I'm upset because. As we resolve more of the unresolved issues inside of us, as we dissolve these barriers to the awareness of the love that we are, our essential nature is more accessible to it. We're more present to the love, the joy, the peace, the aliveness, the creativity, and wisdom that is our inherent nature.
And you become a much more peaceful person. And by peaceful, I mean truly peaceful, not what's referred to as a spiritual bypass, where you just say, well, everything is perfect, so I won't, you know. I'm talking about living in the world actively and watching things that go around, and it just doesn't disturb your peace because you recognize there's a reality that is being served. I remember one time, quite a few years ago, listening to a guy named Ram Dass, who you may recall, and he was talking about his teacher, and his teacher made the incredible statement that the only emotion that remains in a totally realized being or a totally awake being is infinite, unbearable compassion. You see all the suffering that's going on all around you, and yet you know that it is all serving a spiritual purpose, and so you don't judge any of it. You have compassion for everyone because you realize that everyone really is doing the best that they know how to do. So awakening spiritually places you more and more into that level of consciousness. And this is what it's really all about from our perspective. This is why we're here. This is what we're doing here. This is our mission as human beings.
I really like that, your definition of awakening as having infinite compassion. And as we awaken, we get more and more of that. And you're saying that's, when you get there, when you have infinite compassion, you are pretty much awake. But one of the things that you say in the book about awakening is a commitment. You need a commitment. You need a commitment to what?
Well, you really need a commitment to awaken. I mean, you have to, this is one of the main things that we've come to accept over time. And it just is that not everyone is ready to awaken. When you start to get that itch inside and you begin to move on this path, you have in fact made an inner commitment to move forward. So what then happens is that you start to find yourself gravitating toward different kinds of books. You're not reading romance novels to the degree that you were before. You start reading different kinds of books about that were written by people who are awakened, because you start to resonate with that. So people who start down this path, the act of starting down the path itself is an act of commitment. But then you reach a place where you say, you know what, I'm going to start doing this more in earnest. I really want to follow this path in a more, let's call it a more disciplined way. Much like someone who wanted to become an athlete has to make a commitment to practice that which they want to be an athlete in. Michael Jordan didn't just get on the basketball court and start shooting baskets. You know, he made a commitment to practice and practice and practice. And it's that kind of an inner sense of commitment that is very, very, very important. And as I said before, that's why we set the book up this way, so that it's relatively easy to make small commitments and then ratchet your way up, rather than saying, well, I'm going to start out by meditating 6 hours a day. That's what the Dalai Lama does. And I mean, that's foolish. No one's going to do that. But maybe starting out with 5 minutes a day will get you there.
Do we have free will?
We have free choice. We have free choice. If we had, I would say you can have free will, but don't jump off any tall buildings without a parachute.
So use a little discretion.
Use a little discretion. We have free choice in how we respond to everyday situations. It's not prescribed. We freely choose every time. What we're saying is that as long as you are driven largely by your ego, you will tend to make one set of choices. Once you start being, conducted more by your authentic self, you will start making other choices. And choices are yours.
Ron, what is our authentic self? Is that our soul, or is that the spark within our soul? What is our authentic self?
Our authentic self? That would be synonymous with soul. Sometimes it's called our higher self. It would be that agency that is within our consciousness. Excuse me. That agency that is within our consciousness that has it knows. And it's what's referred to very often in spiritual teachings as the still small voice within. Because most of us, our ego is speaking so loudly in this physical world reality that it's very difficult to attune to that still small voice. This is why mindfulness is getting such a big play these days, is because more people are taking time to be quiet and listen more carefully inside to messages that generally go unnoticed because the static is too loud.
You know, and the vibrational frequency of the authentic self is that of unconditional loving. It is also joy and compassion. It is the experience of our soul within us. And we can gain access, greater access, to the experience of the authentic self so that we spend more time residing there to the degree that we let go of the misidentification with our ego, with the duality of light, wrong, good, bad, and we learn how to become, let me say it this way, we learn to see more with the eyes of our heart. One of the very first chapters in the book talks about seeing through soul-centered eyes, and that is stepping free of seeing through the eyes of the ego, which tend to be judgmental and look at things as right and wrong.
How about if we give you an example of something that just happened this past weekend of one of our students in the class and the experience that he shared?
This was such a beautiful sharing. This is a man who has had some significant challenges in his life and had actually done about 18 months in prison for a white-collar crime, quote-unquote. And he shared that he had been doing one of the practices that we write about in the book that we call Write and Burn. And he, as he was writing, his writing turned into a letter to God. And he said that in the letter, he shared with God things that he had never shared with anyone. And he completed the freeform writing, the write and burn exercise. He got up, he went into the kitchen to get a drink of water. And as he was drinking the water, what started to happen, Dave, was that inside of him, he began to receive a letter from God. And so he went back to his paper and pen, and he took down the letter that he received from God. This man's face was luminous. There was such a lightness of being, and it was clear that he had laid down some burdens that he had been carrying for who knows how long. But this is a beautiful example of what happens for people as they let go of their ego identification, the propensity to judge themselves and make themselves wrong and make others wrong, and they connect with their essential nature.
Now, the skeptics might say, well, how do you know that was a letter from God? And our answer would be, it doesn't matter where it came from. All that really matters is that it was a very, very, very deep communication. Maybe it was coming from his authentic self. That doesn't really matter. It's the quality of the experience that he had that makes it what we would call authentic self-level experience. So once you start having these kinds of experiences or see it in others, and this is why our classes are so highly experiential, because when one person in class has that experience in class and they stand up and share from that place inside themselves with our experience, that loving essence in that moment, it's catching. It's like the frequency of that goes out to everybody in the class, and everybody just starts to feel it. And you can tell when that's going on by the amount of tissues that are reached for, because it just touches everybody in a very, very, very deep place. And once you start having those experiences, then is when belief is replaced by knowing.
In the book, you talk about the importance of enthusiasm and intention, and then you talk about clear intention. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, intention is really the gathering of your energy in service to a particular direction, a particular outcome. And a clear intention involves clarity of purpose and the willingness to act on it. And if you want to get an idea of the power of intention, think about the power of your intention to take your next breath. It's like you might be able to hold your breath for 30 seconds. Some people who've trained may be able to hold their breath for 2 minutes, but at some point, the intention of the body to breathe will take over, and you will breathe your next breath.
Go
ahead, Ron.
One way you could think about it, if you were, for example, going to go on a holiday, and you were going to go skiing, let's just say, one of the things you would do is you would make sure that you had ski boots and that you had skis and that you had warm clothing and sunglasses and all of those kinds of things. So when you start to move toward certain activity, you prepare for it. And that would be another way to think about intention. You start to move yourself in the direction of that which you want more of. So I used the example before of meditating, you know, mindfulness. You want to sit down for a certain period of time. When we were writing this book and the previous book, Loyalty to Your Soul, we had a clear intention to write the book. Now, part of that was because we were being inspired. But nevertheless, it took sitting down a certain amount of time, a certain number of days a week, to devote yourself to the writing process. So it's that kind of an idea.
One of the things you said in the book, which I really liked, was that if you want to have intention and you want to have clear intention, it's when your thoughts and your feelings and your actions are consistent. And I think that was a really good way to put it.
It really is, because if they're in alignment with each other, then it's like an arrow moving towards the target. And when we have competing intentions, then usually our thoughts and feelings are not congruent with the action that we say we want to take.
Do you think we had a choice of whether we incarnate into this life or not, or were we forced to do it?
No, I think it's definitely a choice. But I think that when we reside in spirit, it's like it's a choice that we are grateful to make.
I can't say this from my own experience, but my first spiritual teacher, when I first began this, used to say that in her perception that souls were actually vying to come onto the earth plane, because it's one of the few places in creation where you have thoughts, feelings, and behavior all in the same place at the same time. Now, again, I can't validate that from my own experience, but you know, I have the kind of, you know, I could just see them all sitting there and taking tests to see if they qualify to come into the earth.
Or drawing straws, maybe?
Yeah,
drawing straws. Our understanding is because when souls then return from their time in the earth school, the other souls see the growth and expansion that has occurred for them.
What do you think our purpose is here? We must have had a reason, right?
Yes.
I believe our purpose includes coming to earth to heal the things that we're here to complete and resolve, and also that we come here to share our gifts. And that, for me, the overarching spiritual purpose is to awaken into the awareness of the love that we are, and then to live in harmony with that.
I think that, the way I conceive of it is that, see, the way I think, that there'd be no point in having this creation if we're only going back to where we came from. I mean, why leave heaven to go to heaven? That makes no sense. So what I've been told, and again, I have no way to validate this, is that it is through creation that God gets to physically experience all of the ramifications of that which it has created. It can't do that unless there is a physical creation. It's like you could understand, let's say, temperature. We have hot, we have cold. But you can't experience that unless you're living in a reality that has both of them showing up. There's really no such thing as cold. It's just a way we describe things. All we really can measure are degrees of heat. There's no such thing as dark. It's just a way of speaking. All we can really experience are degrees of light. But it's only when you have both polarities present that you actually get to experience that dimension. And in exactly the same way, this will sound like a strange thing to a lot of people, there's really no such thing as evil. All there is love. But in this creation, there is the perceived absence of love, which we call wrong, hate, bad, evil. All those words mean the same thing. There's no such thing really as that. There's just degrees of love. But we have to have ways of talking about it, because that's the experience that we have. And awakening is the process by which we simply move into the realization that the only thing that is really going on here is love. And I don't remember if I tell this story in one of the books or not. When my teacher and I were walking toward a hospital, and someone was wheeling a young man toward us, and he was in a kind of semi-convulsion. You know, we've seen these people, they're kind of contorted, and they don't seem to have any awareness of what's going on. A young man, probably about 15 or so. And we walk by him, and, you know, inside of me, I'm going, oh my God, And my teacher, who's very clairvoyant, simply says to me, you know, Ron, there's really no need for you to be feel bad about that young man and feel sorry for him. The fact of the matter is that this is his last incarnation. He has passed every test that he has faced in this lifetime, and he is going to graduate from this school and never have to come back again. And he knows this, and he is deliriously happy. He will simply complete this by endurance, and he has a few more years left to go. So don't feel sorry for him. He is ecstatic beyond anything you could possibly understand.
Yeah, well, that's it.
You know, I thought, wow, I got to remember that.
You know, I think that that we're here to learn about ourselves. I think we're part of the I think we're part of the universal consciousness, and the universal consciousness has to live for eternity. And I think it has to be interested in things, and it has to understand things. And I think it has to understand itself, because in reality, everything that exists is the universal consciousness. So that's what it wants to understand. And I think we're helping it do that by trying to understand and learn about ourselves. Yeah, but again, that's my perspective.
That would be one way to look at it. You know, understand about ourselves would mean, another way to say that would be experience ourselves. Experience.
Exactly. And we do it through experience. Is my mic having trouble? Are you having trouble hearing me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Is that any better?
No.
No, it's not any better.
It's getting worse.
Can you hear me at all?
Just barely.
That's a little better. It's getting clearer nowadays. It's
getting a little clearer. Okay. Why don't you tell the listeners what you guys are rising up to? Can you hear that?
No.
Oh. Tell the listeners what you are doing.
Yes. Well, for those who are interested in reading Remembering the Light Within, the book is available on Amazon.com. If someone would like to get a taste of this work, we offer a weekend workshop at the university in Santa Monica, California, in August. That workshop is called Loyalty to Your Soul. It's a Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday, and is a wonderful introduction to the basic principles and practices of spiritual psychology. People can also get more information by visiting the university's website at universityofsantamonica.edu. The primary program that we offer for people that is the entry-level work is a 10-month certificate program in soul-centered living that is a wonderful opportunity to really learn and integrate these as a way of life, and also to learn the principles and practices that can help dissolve and resolve the issues that block us from the awareness of ourselves as the presence of love.
Well, if someone wants to really get a taste of this, then the Loyalty to Your Soul weekend workshop, which we only do once a year, that's a fantastic way to get your feet wet.
Ron and Mary Holnick, thank you so much for being with us today. You were really great guests.
Thank you, Dave. Really a pleasure to chat with you.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes of both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.